You're listening to the 10 Bagger Podcast, presented by The Daily Gold. Join us as we uncover tomorrow's 10 baggers today. And now here's your host, Jordan Royburn.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to another episode of the 10 Bagger Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. With me today is Ben Kramer Miller. He is a mining analyst and an entrepreneur in the mining space. And he is a new guest. I've noticed him on Twitter. Great opinions and insights on a number of issues with mining. Ben, thanks so much for joining us today. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Jordan.
Ben, the first thing I want to ask is just how you came to the mining sector and the mining industry, and the junior mining industry in particular. Correct me if I'm wrong, but that's what I think it is.
Yeah, so I primarily focus on juniors. I became interested in the gold market when the economy was collapsing in 2008, and you know, gold seemed like a an interesting way to position myself. And I got this idea in my head that, well, if I like gold, then gold miners should offer leverage. I was more naive at the time, and I got involved in a gold business. I was I was buying people's gold jewelry and selling it and doing pretty well with that. And then I started writing on Seeking Alpha and Seeking Alpha. Around that time, this has got to be about 2013. They changed their incentive structure to get more people and smarter people writing. So I started focusing on that full time. And since then, I've had a newsletter that unfortunately did not work out. This was 2016. It was still a very rough market for juniors. And I've done consulting work for various junior companies. Right now I'm not that active in that way, but I'm working with a couple of companies, West Vault Mining and AnGold Resources. I have an exploration company. And I'm always looking for early stage exploration opportunities, things that are typically too early stage for, even most juniors. That's what I'm doing now.
So, one thing I noticed whenever a company, a producer puts out some bad news, you always tweet, "This is why I don't buy miners." And it seems to be a regular tweet from you. So can you talk about why you avoid miners, and are you talking about any miner, or are you talking about the senior miners in general? I mean, what specifically are you talking about, and how did you come to that realization that's a specific group you did not want to invest in?
So yeah, I came to that realization simply just by experiencing the poor performance of miners, even in a strong market. Now, what do I mean by I don't buy miners? Any company that is physically taking rock out of the ground and trying to process it for a profit, I'm not interested in owning it, and I may be interested in selling it short. Companies that are on the verge of construction, that are in construction, I'd put them in the same boat. What I do invest in is, exploration companies or, exploration projects privately. I've built a very strong network of geologists, and, I trust their judgment to help put together, interesting claim blocks. I'll invest in public companies, public explorers, if, they're able to offer opportunities that I'm not able to access myself. So that's primarily going to be, things that are too big for me to handle privately. And then I will invest in the royalty companies. And this is, where the bulk of, my resource capital is. The royalty companies, unlike the mining companies, they don't see their costs rise when you see inflation. They benefit from, mining companies taking a lot of risk, like expanding production capacity or carrying out exploration work. The royalty companies will, if there's a failure in these efforts, the royalty companies will not lose. But if they are successful, then the royalty companies do gain something. So the risk reward is very compelling. And, they also have a very low cost of capital. A company like Wheaton Precious Metals or Franco Nevada, they're able to borrow at maybe 1-2% above LIBOR. And, this gives them an enormous advantage when it comes to competing with other sources of financing mines. And they do so through, retaining streams. And, a Wheaton Precious Metals can borrow money at a couple percent and use that money to finance part of a mine. And in return, they'll get part of the gold and silver from that. And the mining company benefits from this because the cost of capital of this capital, the streaming capital, is typically lower than debt financing and typically lower than equity financing, especially in a market like today. And also because the mining company isn't taking on any debt, it's able to materially reduce its payback period. And it makes it easier for them to, get, the rest of the capital that they need through debt financing. So, these companies have compounded relatively consistently over time. They've outperformed the miners. They've outperformed metal prices. There are going to be short periods of time where the miners do outperform, because they do offer more leverage. But over the long run, the royalty companies they appear to me to be investable businesses, and they are among the best businesses that I've come across just in general investing. Meanwhile, mining companies, with a few exceptions, typically do not generate a positive return on investment. And you have a lot of mining companies out there, a lot of these majors that are trading at levels that they were trading at when gold was $500 or $600 an ounce. You have companies that they're increasing their share count. They're reducing the number of ounces that they are producing. They just generally have not been good stewards of capital. There are exceptions. Randgold was an obvious exception. It generated an enormous return. Most of these companies just don't make money for their investors, and they've proven not to offer good leverage to the gold price. If for your listeners who want to bet that the gold price is going higher, just buy gold. If you want leverage and you want to play that game, then just buy options on gold futures or GLD. I think that's a much better risk reward proposition than playing some of these miners, unless you're really good at it and you're good at timing the market.
Okay, yeah, fair enough. And so following up on that, but you, at the same time, you look for tiny early stage exploration opportunities because because of the outsized return potential? I mean, it kind of flies in the face of what you're saying, or is that part of a barbell strategy, basically?
It is part of a barbell strategy, and a big part of it is the potential for outsized returns. I think another thing is just that there are a lot more people analyzing mining companies than exploration companies, And I think a lot of the people who get involved in Explorers are, you know, doing so because, you know, they've, you know, come across a good salesman, not necessarily a good investment opportunity. And so I think, you know, for people who are willing to put in the work to understand what it takes to find a deposit and, you know, some of the nuances, of finding different kinds of deposits or working in different jurisdictions, I think that there's room for people to gain a material intellectual advantage there that that I don't really see with mining companies.
But is there also room for in the space of looking at small junior producers that have big growth potential? Because I mean, that's a niche that I focus on and have done well with. And I mean, it's not exactly similar to exploration, but I think that that's also potentially a niche if you know how to analyze companies and understand, you know, which ones have a likelihood of being successful and which ones don't. I think there's, you know, opportunity there with respect to the crowd not knowing that much. I guess I'm just pointing out, does that also potentially apply to junior producers?
Oh, it certainly applies. And let me be clear, you know, I'm explaining what I do and, you know, why I do it. That doesn't mean that there aren't other ways to make money in resources. If you're very good at analyzing, you know, small producers, a lot of them do fly under the radar. You can make money. A couple of good ones that stand out that I've mentioned positively in my Twitter feed. One is a company called West African Resources, which has one of the highest margin operations that I think any company has right now. And if you're willing to take on the risk of owning something in Burkina Faso, then that's one worth taking a look at. And another one is a company called Dynacore Resources, which is they toll process ore for artisanal miners in Peru. And, you know, they've been profitable for, I'd say, the last like 12 years or so, despite, having to go through much lower gold prices. They've been paying dividends. They've been paying rising dividends. They've been repurchasing shares and, you know, they've created good shareholder value. So yeah, there are certainly opportunities out there. It's just not how I invest.
Okay. So circling back to exploration, I mean, for the average person listening, what guidance, or help can you give them in terms of looking at early stage or even just, you know, the exploration stage where they start drilling? What tips or pointers can you offer to people who, you know, they know a little bit, but they don't have your expertise? How can you help them when looking at these small companies to try and assess, you know, which ones are really have a shot to get that 10 or 20X versus which ones are, they don't have a shot at all? Because for me, I feel like, you know, in looking at juniors, I think it's, you know, I'm not an expert like you, but it's pretty easy to look at a lot of these companies and understand like which ones, okay, that's, you know, not going to work, but you know, this handful here, these might have a shot. How can you help our listeners, you know, when they go down that road, how can you help them kind of distinguish between which ones they should be looking at and which ones they should completely avoid?
Yeah, so a few things there. So the first is, bet small on these things. You have the potential to lose all of your money in exploration. It's very risky, and even people who are very good at it and who have had serial success get it wrong sometimes. Actually, they get it wrong a lot. So the first thing is you have to bet small. And based on some of the comments I see from people, this might actually be difficult. Part of it is keeping your emotions in check. The second thing is, try to learn as much about geology, exploration geology as you can. I mean, there are plenty of good resources on the internet. There are plenty of good books. I'm happy to put together a list. I've put together lists and made recommendations on my Twitter feed in the past. But I could put something together. Geology is you're dealing with it's applied a lot of different subjects. It's applied physics. It's applied chemistry. When you start factoring in, well, is this going to be economic? You have to start looking at economics and what the various demands are going to be for things like gold, copper, etc. And the third thing that I would do is try to specialize. You can specialize in a lot of different ways. Focus on a deposit type or a couple deposit types. Focus on a couple of regions. Going back to what I was saying earlier, try to give yourself some kind of edge, where you have such granular knowledge of, say, how to operate and what it means to operate in Nevada and to look for epithermal deposits in Nevada that the crowd really can't compete with that level of knowledge. Another thing is, look closely at management. I encourage people to talk with management teams. Some are more receptive to this than others, and it depends on what your reach is, how much money you plan on investing. If you plan on investing $100,000 into a $20 million company, you're probably going to get a lot of attention. If you're planning on investing $5,000, you're probably not going to get so much attention. But see how management responds, see how they answer your questions, see how they react to feedback and to criticism and that sort of thing. And just try to get a feel for whether management is trying to just give you information or whether they're trying to present a rosy picture to you in order to convince you to buy the shares.
Okay, and how do you feel about insider ownership? How do you feel about insider ownership? Because a lot of people, that's a huge thing for most people, and also not just having this huge position that they got when they started the company at, 1 cent or whatever the founder's shares were at. I mean, how is that a very important thing to you, that management is still buying stock in the market, that they have a high insider ownership? Or is that, what are your opinions on that?
The short answer is yes, but there are always caveats, and you need to look at things on a case by case basis. I've heard complaints about lack of insider ownership for certain deals where, especially by the CEO, and the CEO is, relatively young, has spent time with juniors. And if you work for juniors versus a Barrick or a Newmont or, some of the larger banks like Canaccord, you're just not making as much money. So, there are plenty of people who, are really devoted and really committed, but just don't have the financial bandwidth to be, heavily investing in their own deals. I would look at it on a case by case basis. And if there's that lack of ownership, make sure you have a good reason for this. I mean, plenty of very smart people have, just not had their big financial break yet. And plenty of people who have made a lot of money have also lost that money. So, there are just subtleties here, and I would be careful of, just outright dismissing a deal because of low insider ownership, low CEO ownership, whatever you're looking at in particular. But yes, it's important, and it's something to look at and to pay attention to.
Yeah, another question I have, and I don't know if there's an answer to this question, but and I respond to, you know, subscriber questions with this sometimes, but when you're looking at explorers and particularly early stage, how can you invest in something where it doesn't feel like you're just gambling on drill holes? Because a lot of stocks, like these early stage tiny ones, it feels like that's what it comes down to. I mean, you're rolling the dice hoping they can hit something. I mean, is there, when you're investing in early stage, I mean, is there a way you can avoid that? Or is that just, I'm just giving a crude answer there? Any thoughts on that?
Well, yeah, there are a few things. So, you know, first, you know, there are things that you can see at surface, at, you know, for some projects, other projects you simply can't. They're undercover. So, you know, if, you know, a company is testing a vein that's outcropping and they've taken chip samples from that vein that are showing that, you know, they have elevated gold or silver or whatever it is that they're looking for, you know, that's going to be a lower risk bet than, you know, somebody, you know, who's done some geophysics and that shows some sort of anomaly at depth, you know, below some cover, that, you know, they're just going to be testing that. So there are little things that you can look at like that. You know, there's always closeology. If you're looking at something that's, you know, near an existing mine and you're seeing certain similarities, you know, that's helpful. And then, you know, also, you know, take a look at management. Has management had success, you know, finding things at this early stage? You know, are they investing themselves in these efforts, or are they just, you know, trying to raise money and drill holes and get press releases out? Are they trying to rush to drill? Drilling moves stocks. Things like, you know, geochem samples, you know, just like chip samples, geophysics, soil samples, things that, you know, can be very important in determining where you're going to drill. These things do not move stocks, but they also cost money and they take time. So, you know, companies that tend to skip these things, sure, they're going to get to drill faster, but, you know, are they picking the highest probability targets or are they not? So, you know, companies that are moving at a meticulous pace and making sure that, you know, when they drill, they are going after the highest quality targets, because of all the things that you can do, drilling is the most expensive. And, you know, both in terms of the actual dollar amount expenditure and also the cost in the market upon failure. If you really talk up a drill target and it doesn't work, you know, your stock can fall 30 to 80%, you know, right away, just on putting those drill results out. So if you're looking at exploration companies, you want to minimize the chance that that's going to happen. And so you want to see companies have the best targets that they can. And that usually requires a little bit of patience and a little bit of boredom. But, you know, that's going to be better than the terror of a stock declining 50% in one day.
Right. And okay, Ben, so before I let you go, do you have a potential 10-bagger stock pick that you'd be willing to share with our audience?
Yeah, sure. The show is called 10-baggers. So, one that I've been buying and I've talked up on Twitter and I'm underwater on it, so don't take this too seriously, is a company called Surge Copper, S-U-R-G, on the Venture Exchange. Surge Copper has a land package in British Columbia. They have land surrounding a recently past producing mine called Huckleberry that's currently on care and maintenance, owned by Imperial. They have a project called Udsa there, and they have several small deposits surrounding that. They did some drilling last year that shows that they can likely expand the resource that they put out in 2016. They have a joint venture with Centerra on a nearby project called Berg. They have the right to earn 70% of that project. And Berg has a resource that was just redone by Surge of about 600 million tons. And then they've accumulated a rather large land package in the area. I forget the exact size, but it's larger than 1,000 square kilometers. They recently completed a ZTEM study, and it's an electromagnetic study that identified a couple of targets. A couple of these are similar to the geophysical signature that that this study showed at Berg. And one of the things that you look for in geophysics is finding signatures that are similar to signatures correspond to resources. So they have a couple of interesting targets from that. I think those are going to take some time for them to drill, because they're going to have to do some surface work first. They have it's a good sized land package. They're in an area where there's been recent mining, so permitting risk should be mitigated. They have a strong team. Leif Nielsen is the CEO, very smart guy. I speak with him regularly. Their chairman, Christian Cargill-Simard, he's CEO of a company called Adventus Mining, which just raised a couple hundred million dollars, including a big package from Wheaton Precious Metals, which those guys are typically very discerning and very discriminating. And then Craig Perry is also on the board. Craig is he's the chairman of Vizsla Silver, which has been very successful, and also Skeena Resources, which again very successful, and one of the few companies that I've ever seen get just straight equity financing from Franco-Nevada. Usually, if there's equity financing from those guys, it comes with a royalty. This one did not, so it was flow through. So there were tax reasons for Franco to do it, but that's really encouraging. People who have proven that they can raise money and engineer large discoveries that have made shareholders in their companies a lot of money. So that's my 10 bagger pick for you today, Sir Copper.
Okay, Ben. Well, thank you so much for that. That's very interesting. That'll give our listeners something to research on their own. And thank you for that. Thank you for all your analysis. And I hope we can have you back in the months ahead to talk about market developments and anything going on with Surge Copper.
Okay, sounds good. Thanks a lot for having me, Jordan.
Thank you for listening to the 10 Bagger Podcast, presented by the Daily Gold. For premium coverage of precious metals and the best junior mining companies, visit thedailygold.com/premium.